Welcome back to the Visionary Practice Solutions podcast. We have a very special guest today. I have Dr. Una with me, who is the founder of EntreMD. She is founder of EntreMD, and it's a company that is on a mission to help 100,000 physicians build profitable seven and seven plus figure businesses so that they have the freedom to practice medicine on their terms and live life on their terms. She is doing this through something called the EntreMD Business School, which I have also been a part of. It is the only school of its kind for physician entrepreneurs. She also has the EntreMD podcast. It's a top 1% podcast, and she has best-selling books. So she has been a busy lady. Dr. Una, as she's fondly called, has also actually been featured in Forbes, and her company was on the Inc. 5000 list of fastest growing privately held companies in America for 2 years running. She is a board certified pediatrician who still has her private practice, and she resides outside of Atlanta with her husband and her four children. Dr. Una, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a treat. I've been looking forward to it.
Yes, yes. Well, I am super excited. We have a variety of people that listen to this podcast, and it's everybody who is, you know, from starting a practice or thinking about starting a practice and is nervous about getting into it. And then also people that are, you know, looking to grow and kind of scale to that next level. They've been doing it for a while, but they're trying to figure out what that next step is for them. So if we can, I really wanted to talk to you today about like your whole process. So like, the story of Dr. Una, when you got into practice, like, how did you decide to do private practice? And like, what were those early years like? And what were your big challenges?
Yeah, so this is going to be helpful for people, because you'll find out that no, it wasn't I had a brilliant plan. No, it wasn't I was a genius. It was none of that stuff, right? And right. So, you know, I started my first job out of residency, and it was perfect, right? So it was a one doctor practice. The person who owned the practice was a neonatologist, and so because of the conflict of interest, he wouldn't see patients in the practice. So it was just me. It was like I had my own solo practice, if you will.
Okay.
It was 10 minutes from home. I had a great team. It was just magical. It was amazing. However, I had this itch. Yeah. And I was like, there has to be something else, right? Mm-hmm. Because what happens after training is you've been on a mission to accomplish a goal for so long. You've been addicted to progress without knowing it, right? Like we move forward, move from med to pre-med, and then we move to this. And like, it's constant. It's almost like then you're done, and then you come to a screeching halt. Like right. You're now here right. And you'll be here till you're 75. And you're like, there's something wrong with this equation, you know?
Yeah.
And so everything was great, but there was just this, there has to be more. I had no concept of what more was. I did not think I would be the person who owned a private practice. Mm-hmm. I did not know there were other business options. I didn't know any of that, but there was just something like something's not right here. And so everything kind of came to a head when, you know, after the first 8 months or so, my boss offered me a 5-year contract. He's like, here you go, you know, 5 years. And at this time in my life, you know, I had been in residency for 3 years. I had been married for 3 years. So my definition of eternity was 3 years, you know?
Right.
So 5 years was a really long time. But I was moving anyway. And so I told him, you know, I'm not going to be able to stay. And so he's like, okay, so then start your own practice. I looked at him like he was nuts. Mm-hmm. I was like, nobody starts a practice a year out of residency. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
He's like, oh yeah. I mean, like you're here. I'm not here. Like you're doing most of what you're going to need to do anyway. And, you know, so you can do it. If you have questions, you can ask me. I was still looking at him like he was crazy. And then he said, and then I said, well, okay, in case you missed this very ginormous bump here, I'm pregnant. Like, this is not the time to start a practice. And he said, yes. But you see, in the beginning, your practice will need you as much and your baby will need you a lot. And as the baby gets older, the baby will need you less and the practice will need you more. It'll be perfect. This is the perfect time to start.
Yeah.
And I like to say, I was like, you know what? You're right. And I went on to start, but that's not the way that played out. So there were many months after that where, you know, I had a mentor who was like, you guys should get ready to start a business. I was like, well, you're not in the medical field. You don't understand how this works. But I started looking, and this would be the first pointer if you're thinking about this. I started looking at pediatric practices, their websites, looking at what they offer, look at their reviews, what do people like, what do people not like. So I had not made the commitment, but I started immersing myself in all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And so somewhere that took root, and I was like, you know what, let's do it. Okay. So made the decision to start a private practice, but I will tell you, ignorance is bliss. Okay. Because that's exactly what happened to me. Because I'm thinking you could see patients, you could talk to your team in the morning, do a huddle meeting. I got this. Right.
It's that uninformed optimism, right?
Like very, very uninformed. Yes. And so, you know, so we started looking for a location. At this time I had, when we started looking for the location, I had just had the baby I was pregnant with. And so this is me, you know, breastfeed the baby, go look at a location, come by, like all of those kind of things. Just crazy. If you can imagine, just completely crazy. And so we found a location. I couldn't even conceptualize a build out, right? So when they talk about, oh, this building, and we're going to do a big, you know, build out, it'll be $72 per square foot. I was like, I'm going to pay to develop somebody else's property. Like, what is going on here? And so I'll be honest with you. I prayed. I said, God, there must be somebody who outgrew their space. It's already built out. All I need is a fresh coat of paint. Like that's about all I can handle right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And we found a location. An OBGYN had just moved out. And so it's perfect. I didn't even need to put the coat of paint. It was just like, boom.
Yes.
I was like, great. So we're like, what's left? Just the lease, right? So signed the lease. And we're like, yay, practice owners. And my thing was, I didn't say, but this was my thought. I would hang the shingle and they will come.
Oh, okay? Yes.
So
yes.
I rented the location, got all these contracts, utilities, all of that stuff. And, you know, hung the proverbial shingle. They did not come.
Nobody came. Yeah.
They did not come. And that was the first rude shock. I was like, hang on. Now, to put this in context, at the time, I was a super shy, socially awkward, introvert. There was no way I would even be a guest on this podcast. Like, that was just not my thing. I didn't talk to people. And so now realizing that I actually had to market, I had to go talk to OBGYNs and say, hey, I'm a new pediatrician, send me your babies, all of that. I died a thousand deaths. So again, if you're listening and you're like, I can't imagine, I couldn't either, okay? I was just caught up in this thing.
Yes.
So here I am. I'm like, okay, well, what are we going to do? And then my husband says, I mean, until you get all the patients you want, your full-time job is to go get all the patients you want. It kind of is what it is.
I love it.
You know? And I it was so uncomfortable. I mean, I literally died, not literally, but I died a thousand deaths on the inside. And so I would go to the OBGYN office. I didn't have the guts to say I wanted to talk to the doctor. Maybe I talked to the front desk.
Yeah.
Then graduate to when I started talking to the office managers and stuff like that. But I put in enough reps that, you know, patients started coming. I was also terrified of hiring. I think you've heard me tell this part, Dr. Sarah, but I didn't hire anybody.
Yeah,
I didn't hire
gold.
A front desk. Yep. I didn't hire a medical assistant. I didn't hire a biller. So guess what? My phone will ring. I'd pick it up. Thank you for calling Ivy League Pediatrics. This is Ella. Ella was my alter ego.
I did the same thing.
Yeah. Ella was my alter ego.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm like, this is Ella. And so they'll say, oh, you know, I want to make an appointment, all that. So I would answer the phone. I would make the appointment.
Yep.
I would work up the patient when they came in. I would see them as the physician. I would do their shots when they left. I would schedule their next appointment. And when they left, I would send their claims to the insurance company. So when people tell me they're scared, I'm like, you have nothing on me. You have team members.
Right.
I have nobody. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yes.
It was so crazy. But again, it points to, so maybe this is the second point. It's having action be your default. Like the fact that you're scared, it doesn't matter. Anybody who is doing great things, anybody who is doing what they haven't done before, there is going to be fear. You could just decide not to let it vote anymore, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And so I was doing all of this and I'm like, what did I get myself into, right? And so the turning point for me came when I read a book by Brian Tracy. It's called Eat That Frog.
Yes.
It's been a bestseller for years. I like to take credit for it because I'm like, everybody in my world has bought a copy of that book. Okay.
Yep, so, I have. Yep.
Yep. So I, you know, I read the book and there was one line where he said, all business skills are learnable. It set me free because I always thought the people who are running really great practices, who are confident speaking on stage, all of that, all these people are just amazing. And I was not, period. End of story. That's the way it is. That's the way it will always be. I was like, hang on. He said, yeah, that the people you see who are doing better than you, they're not better than you. They just know things you don't know. And I said, hang on. I may not know how to hire, fire, build company culture, market, do all of that stuff, but there is one thing that I'm very confident in my ability to do,
yep.
and that is to learn.
Yes.
And I said, so if learning is the issue, game on, right?
Yeah, let's
so
do this.
It took me out of this whole thing of all of this being a mystery to a place where any area where I'm having a problem in my business just represents a skill I don't have.
Yeah.
And that is such a fun place to be in. So I started learning to market, right? So as an introvert, I thought I had a handicap. I'll never be able to speak confidently on stage. I don't network. I'm always going to be awkward with people and all of that. And I realized that's not what it means at all. It means that, you know, social situations and all of that, they would deplete me.
Yes.
And the awareness of that just means when I'm done doing all of those things, I have to go recharge. So I go take a walk by myself or go take a long shower or, you know, go somewhere, just have my headphones in, like hashtag don't talk to me. Right.
Right. Right.
And I recharge and then we can get back at it. So speaking is not a personality type. It's a skill. Networking is not a personality type. It's a skill. Like these are all skills.
Yep.
And so I started learning these things and I would learn and I would apply. I would learn, make mistakes, learn, apply. And I'm telling you, we probably took that practice to seven figures by year three.
Yes.
And it was just like a ride from then. And, you know, I also read Michael Gerber's book, The E-Myth Physician.
Oh, yeah.
And I bought into that, you know, philosophy of building my practice as a business asset, not my job.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though, again, this is that default of action, even though I could not imagine another doctor on my payroll, like, that's like over
yeah.
six figures. We're
yes.
not going to do that, right?
Yes, yes.
But I could imagine hiring somebody who wanted to work one day a week. There was a doctor in my world. One day a week was her thing. One day a week worked well for me. And so she worked every Friday. And so I had a long weekend every weekend. So the money was working. The team was working.
Yep.
It was all working. It was magical. So for the person who's early on, I would say, and this was 14 years ago when all of this happened, I would say, you know, if the itch is there, scratch it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're not going to, without action, become more confident. You're not going to, without action, acquire the skills. Nobody's ever going to give you a guarantee. So the things that we wait on are things that will never happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might as well start. You might as well put yourself in a position to learn the skills you need to learn and then just go do it. Yeah. I will tell you, you've probably heard me say this, that with entrepreneurship, it's so amazing. The impact you can have in the lives of people is so mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
It is so amazing. And this is for your patients. This is for your team members. All of that is so amazing. It is so amazing the revenue you create and the financial freedom you create for yourself and the time freedom and all of that. But I will tell you that the most rewarding thing about entrepreneurship is not any of those things, is who you become in the process.
Yeah.
Like when you start taking the action, when you start daring your fears, when you start doing things you didn't think you can do, you will bump into a version of yourself where you go like, well, all right.
Yes.
I like her.
Yes.
I like
him. Yeah.
You would love that person. And I would love for you to meet that person.
Yes. Yeah. You do. You get to kind of step back and look at even just where you were just a year prior to that. And you're just like, I did not even know what a P&L was when I started. Like I remember sitting in my car having a conversation with my you know, business banker, because I was so excited. I was big time now. And he goes, yeah, we're going to need a P&L and a da da da. And my mother, thank God, was a bookkeeper for me. And I called her and I was like, what is a P&L? And she was like, oh my God.
Like so P we, and the letter N.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I thought it was. I had no idea what it even stood for. So, you know, but to go from that to, you know, just in a matter of a few years being like, oh yeah, I've got the systems in place. I'm able to take time off. Like it's, you do, you become this whole different person and you're looking at life differently. Like, oh, I could learn this skill. I love that. I thank you for bringing that part up. What
can
were
I tell
like,
you something though?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because again, I like to point this out. It took me years to figure out a profit and loss statement. And even when I knew what it is, I refused to look at it.
Oh, then
because I was
that.
Like, I don't do numbers.
Right.
I see patients.
Right. Right.
And I'm saying that because someone is thinking, because I don't know this profit and loss statement thing, I'm not ready to start.
Yeah.
You start. That's how you get ready.
Yeah.
You start.
Yeah. Even if you've got that anxiety around looking at the numbers and looking at your revenue, like at some point, if you just take that action and you do it enough, like you stop being afraid of it. You realize that it is literally just numbers. It's just a way to metrically look at how my practice is doing, and you stop putting so much emotion in it. So no, I think that's amazing. What were some of the, like, as you're growing and you're getting to that like seven figure place, what were some of the big bottlenecks that you noticed happening? Like, well, where were those bottlenecks?
It's always the person,
right?
It's always the person. And so your bank account is a reflection of your personal development. Mm-hmm. It is a reflection of how much discomfort you're willing to embrace. Yeah. It's a reflection of how many bold steps you're willing to take or not take. It was me. And so there was, you know, there was the mind. I mean, that's what it is. There's the mind drama around hiring people. Mm-hmm. And there is a limit to how much you can grow if you will not hire people.
Yep.
There was a mindset drama around then leading the people you hire,
mm-hmm.
right? Because mm-hmm. many people, I see this all the time when I start working with people, they have the people, they have never had a meeting with them. They have never cast vision. They have never owned their mission statement. And when it comes to holding them accountable, I don't want to hold them accountable because they may leave. So what mm-hmm. they have is a liability because mm-hmm. they're paying the person, but the person is doing nothing for the bottom line. And right. so there's that, right?
Right.
There's that piece as well. There is the piece of even owning the goals that you have, because sometimes it's like, I could build seven figures, but if I own it mm-hmm. and I don't do it, mm-hmm. then I'm going to be sad and depressed. So what we really want, we're not doing it anyway.
Yeah.
We're not going for it, right? So things like that showed up. In the very beginning, the marketing piece was so hard.
Yeah.
It was so hard. And so that got in the way quite
mm-hmm.
a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Spending money.
Oh, worst.
So I started with I think Practice Fusion was free at the time.
Yes,
that was
that's
the
what
EHR.
I started yes. with too. Yes, yes, it was free. I was like, great, looks good.
Let's do that. It's amazing. And not to knock Practice Fusion, because it really helped me the first, mm-hmm. I think, 4 years of my practice, mm-hmm. You know, and stuff. But I realized, I was like, you know, like there wasn't a lot of structured data.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of ability to pull like results you can use to make business decisions.
Yeah.
And so even things like I would give a vaccine, it won't pour it over to the super bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I didn't manually put it in, it wouldn't make its way to the super bill. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if you then hired somebody and every day they forgot to put five vaccines? You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah.
And so I started looking at another EHR. You get a kick out of this. I started looking at another EHR because I was like, in order to get paid for the work we're doing, mm-hmm. I do need a better system. And if I'm going to bring on another physician, I'm looking at it so carefully because I pay the expenses, mm-hmm. but they don't pay the expenses. Mm-mm. So they're not going to look at it.
They're
I need
miss
to
it.
Mm-hmm. remove the margin of error.
Yep.
And so I look at this EHR, it's Pete Specifics, it's really good. And it's like $2,000 a month.
Right.
And I could see the path to, yes, it's $2,000 a month, but it gives you so many capabilities. You can make that money over, over and over and over mm-hmm. again. But I was like, $2,000 a month for an mm-hmm. EHR? Is it mm-hmm. laced with gold? What
right.
is going on?
Right. Is it
going
to see my patients for me? Like,
is it going to, I mean, like, do I just put it in and walk away from the practice and everything works?
Right.
And I kid you not. So this is an example. It took me 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It took me two whole years, mm-hmm. over 700 days mm-hmm. to go like, fine, let me sign up for this.
Yeah.
Right. And so the money drama, the team drama, the marketing drama, those mm-hmm. were all the things that I had to work through.
Yeah.
But again, if you're willing to take the action, because I knew they were expensive when I got on a call with a person. Mm-hmm. To ask about the EHR, mm-hmm, but at least mm-hmm. I started doing that. It took me 2 years, but it could have taken 10. Do you see
right.
what I'm saying? Like,
right.
so
yes.
still just ugh, even in the midst of it, still taking that action.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
and so fear is a big thing.
Yeah.
And that's something we have to navigate, upgrading your identity. Cause
yes.
a lot of times we identify as a person who worked a job, mm-hmm. but you have a business now, right? Mm-hmm. You have to mm-hmm. come up to who you are now.
Yep.
It is all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That mind drama part. And I think too, like once you're, I think there's a difference, you know, that you go through those phases, right? Like you say, you know, you're employed and that's one identity. And then you're like, okay, I'm a solo doc. and I don't spend much money. That's my new identity. And then you get to the place where you're like, okay, I'm big enough now and I can't even keep up with this. And I also want a quality of life. So now you start looking at like hiring another provider. That's a whole other shift in identity. Cause now not only am I a business owner, I'm a doctor who employs other doctors or other practitioners. Like, how did you come to the conclusion that you were ready to take that step? And then what were some of the things that kind of changed for you? You know, how did you decide you would budget them? Like, what did that look like for you to grow into that person? Cause that's a whole separate level.
So in case you guys can't see me, I'm just giggling the whole time.
Yes,
that was a whole hot mess. Okay, let's talk about that. So how did I know? So when I started off, when I had that aha moment of, you know, after I saw my first patient, I was like, there has to be more. Like, mm-hmm. doing this forever, it makes no sense. I kind of came up with this thing that I was going to do clinical medicine for 10 years. Don't ask why. I just have these weird things and I roll with it. So I said I'd give this 10 years. And that's because I said I have 9 lives, you know, that I have to live them all, you know?
Sure.
And so I always knew that at some point I would need to hire. Now, that doesn't mean I was excited about it or I knew how to pull it off or I had any less drama, but
right.
I had to think about that, right? So I had the person who worked a day a week, which in the grand scheme of events, that's not a huge dent to the payroll. But we got to this point where I knew that I needed a second person for the volume we had and mm-hmm. if I was going to be able to cut my time any, right? And so I knew that it was time and I calculated how much I would pay the person for a year and I gulped mm-hmm. and I broke it down to what that would look like, you know, the difference in my payroll mm-hmm. mm-hmm. that I have to approve every 2 weeks.
Right. And then you pick yourself off the floor.
I gulped even louder. There was so much drama around that.
Yeah,
I can't even begin to explain. And I don't think there's any way to overcome the drama except to, one, just do it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not going to feel better. Just do it. And then the other was kind of looking at the ROI. So mm-hmm. so this is a way of thinking. It doesn't remove the drama. It just lets you know you're saying yes to whatever scary thing you need to say yes to, and it's not a stupid decision. That's all that it does for you.
Right, but the drama is still there.
Yeah. And so for me, I would say, okay, how many patients would this person have to see for us mm-hmm. to break even? Do I have the capacity to generate, like on my own, generate that number of visits for this person? Mm-hmm. What would we need to do on a consistent basis to make that happen? And so once I had all of that data, I was still scared, but I was like, at least I'm not making a decision that is fatal for my practice.
Sure.
But the process of deciding to hire the person was scary. The process of interviewing the person, I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Self, what are you doing? This is ridiculous.
Right.
And then saying yes and giving out the contract. I'm like, oh my goodness, what if this doesn't work? But again, the default of action, right? Mm-hmm. But it was drama the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah.
For my first hire. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Where did you end up finding, like, how did you attract talent for that? Where did you end up finding the docs you've hired?
So it depends on if you want the 2015 answer or if you want what I think about it now.
How about what you think about it now?
Yeah, let's talk about
hindsight
that.
Is always 2020. So let's go with that.
Well, so in the times that we're in, I know it looks like it's really hard to hire doctors. You know, people talk about that, I've been looking for a long time. I'm not discrediting that. Yes, of course, you know, it is what it is. But if we think about it, we have never had physicians in as much flux as we have now. It has never happened where so many doctors have changed jobs, so many doctors mm-hmm. were fired, so many doctors are so unsatisfied with the positions that they have now.
Yeah.
And so once we think about it in those terms, we come with this mindset that it's easier, not harder.
Mm-hmm.
Like even the people who have jobs, they will jump ship if they found somewhere that was better. right? The level of burnout, the loss of autonomy, how devalued they are. There has never been a better time to hire docs. And that's the truth.
Yeah.
There are, I've met Harvard trained physicians who not only did they say they will do it, they've done it where their substitute teacher is in their kid's school.
Yes. Because
they're like, I just can't take it anymore.
Yes.
Right.
I know someone who did that. Yes.
So, and those people don't hate medicine. They're just crushed by the system.
Right.
And so if they figure they could work 2 days, like sometimes people are like, I only want someone 2 or 3 days. I'm like, there are many people, that's all they want.
Yeah.
But
or that's all they
can
handle at the time. Yeah.
Exactly. So we just think it's a disadvantage. No. They're looking. And so really, first of all, is that mindset, understanding like this is a great time to hire. Like this is better than it's been in the past. That we have never had so many physicians looking. We have never had so many physicians who are willing to leave where they are. It has never happened before. Mm-hmm. So that's the starting point. Now, the second piece is, you know, I don't know what you did, but when I started hiring people, I would look for a nice job ad, copy, paste, edit, boom.
Yep.
That's now my ad.
Yep.
That doesn't work anymore.
No, it
right?
does not.
Nobody cares that your practice is 20 minutes from the coastal, whatever, and 2 minutes from the airport.
Right.
Nobody cares.
Right.
Nobody cares.
Right.
So when I talk with, you know, the doctors that I work with, I tell them, treat this the same as if you were selling somebody a product. Mm-hmm. What is the pain they have? What is the benefit of working with you? Paints that picture. I'll give you an example. So in my practice, we don't start till 9:30. You know what I mean? So if the mommies mm-hmm. want to go drop off their kids or do whatever, they can do that. They don't do any hospital call. They
mm-hmm.
do not ever have to go to a hospital or attend a delivery or be a hospitalist. None of that. They don't have to do any of that. They don't have to do any overnight call, right? Mm-hmm. They get to work in an environment that is very supportive, mm-hmm. very unlike many places, very, very supportive. Like the team is there to support them, to help them win.
Mm-hmm.
But I could have all of that and do some generic, you know, job ad.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to know. They're not going to, that's my job to tell them. That's my job to paint the picture.
Right.
And so what is the pain they have? They're working overnight. They're doing all these calls. They have to, chart when they're at home, all of these things. And mm-hmm. I'm like, no, when you work for me, you still get to take your kids to school.
Yep.
You don't have to go to the hospital. We will train you so you finish your charts when you're in the office. We mm-hmm. don't want you doing charts at home. Mm-hmm. We will show you like all of that stuff. And so you have to sell them on the position. The era of copy, edit, paste, that doesn't work anymore, right?
Yeah.
Because there's so much pain, so there's so much opportunity. Find out whatever the pain is that working in your practice will fix and flip it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, this is what you get when you come to work for us. And there are people who would take a pay cut from where they are. And that's not to say we don't pay people well, but there are people who take a pay cut to leave whatever environment they are in to work in your environment if you tell them what they stand to gain.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's the second piece of it, is that we actually have to sell it. And then the third thing is tell everybody you're hiring.
Right. Yeah,
everybody.
Get it out there.
Buddy, send 100 text messages and tell them you're hiring. Post in every Facebook group that you're hiring. Tell, like, I've had great hires who are not even physicians, who are like, I heard you're looking. I know this doctor, like a completely different state, not in the medical field, all that. If I was not loud-mouthed about the fact that I was looking, they would never have known.
Right.
And so
right.
tell everybody.
I love
yes.
that.
Yes, everybody. Every opportunity,
that.
Every place, go all in, you know, pretend like you have a product launch, like this mm-hmm. is a product launch, do a really nice sales copy, quote unquote, which is your job ad, and mm-hmm. then tell everybody, everybody you're hiring.
That's fantastic. I love that advice.
And tell them until you hire.
Yes. Yeah. And keep going. Don't just do one iteration and call it good. Yeah. And so, I mean, obviously, you know, we're, like you were saying, I mean, we have a lot of physicians that are burning out, a lot of docs that I think are looking for a lot more out of, you know, out of practice, out of life. We kind of got here and we're like, wait, this is it? Like, I kind of want to do something more than this. So tell us about EntreMD and how this came about.
Yeah. So I want to backtrack just a little bit. I want to throw this out because it's a mistake I see a lot of people make. If you're running a private practice, chances are you'll bump into challenges, and mm-hmm. sometimes we distract ourselves with new business ideas
mm-hmm.
because we don't want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. We don't want to hire. We don't want to hire the office manager. We don't want to deal with someone we need to dehire. We don't want to rework our system so it can work. And we're like, oh, I have this new idea.
Shiny object syndrome.
I want to have multiple streams of income. I'm like, okay. So I just want to put it out there that as a practice owner, you can build a practice that can work without you, but you're going to need to work the profitability of it. So you make sure it's profitable. There are things you need to do to make sure of that. You need to hire a team that can do the work, and you need to train the team. That's where people are like, nah, why didn't they come in with the training already? It doesn't work that way. You can have somebody who is, you know, and I apologize for using junk food, but you know, you can have someone who's a genius at Burger King, but if they go to McDonald's, they're going to need training. You cannot, you cannot just plug the person in and say you are great there. It doesn't work that way. The reason I know this is because I was like, why do I need to train them? Like almost subconsciously, why can't they read my mind? Why don't they know what I want done? Blah, blah, blah. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And if you do the dirty, hard work of training them, they will give you freedom.
Yes.
That's the price for freedom.
Yes.
Now, when you, and you don't have to have all of this completely in place for you to look at other things, but you need to be on that path, because if you're not, it's not, the foundation is not strong enough. All it takes is one thing, and you have to abandon whatever it is you went for and go in here. And yeah. So I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah. Sometimes that's an amazing point. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes we use it to distract ourselves. We just come up with new things because we don't want to do the work that's required. But it doesn't matter how many new things you get, you're still going to get to that same point where that work will be required.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Spend the time to self-reflect on that.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes. So in 2016, so this is, you know, 8 years ago, there was no problem in my practice. There was nothing wrong. Life was good. I was working 4-day work weeks, all of that stuff. And I just had this, aha moment. We'll say intuition more than based on anything was happening, because it wasn't based on what was happening. And it was like, if all you know how to do is to doctor, like to physically touch patients and doctor, you're going to be out of luck, because the healthcare space has changed fundamentally and it's never going back to the way it was.
Yeah.
And so I started thinking, I said, well, if I could not, you know, do what I do as a doctor, like how could I still have a significant impact on healthcare, and how can I still protect my earning power?
Yeah.
And I was, I mean, 2016, if you think back to that time, there's nothing terribly wrong on the surface. Like there wasn't anything. And so I said, well, I could, you know, I run a successful practice. I could be a consultant. I didn't even know coaching was a thing. Like that's how green I was. I was like, so I could do that. You know, people make money as speakers, like people, that's their career. I could be a speaker, which was very laughable, because at that time I wouldn't even talk to one person one-on-one talking.
Right. The introverted introvert. Yes.
Yeah. Because like I could do that. I could be an author. I said I could even be the CEO of my practice as opposed to lead pediatrician, because those are two completely different roles.
Different roles. Yeah.
You know, and I can optimize that. I can, you know, learn how to show up that way. And so it became very obvious that I needed to retool myself. I needed to, again, learn these skills, because the skills that got me to where I was in private practice, they would not take me to where I needed to go. And so, you know, I started training as a speaker. So fun. Started training as a speaker, started experimenting with all those things. But I said, this aha that I had, it can't wait on me to be fully developed to turn around and help doctors, because there's a million physicians and we all need to retool ourselves. And it's all going to be ugly if we don't retool ourselves. If we do things the way we've always done it, we're going to be in a lot of trouble.
This is going to hurt. Yeah.
So I said, I haven't learned everything, but I think I've learned enough to help people. And that's literally how EntreMD was born. And, you know, in the process of doing that, you know, I started studying, like, what do you do to shift the narrative for a whole community? How do you affect change in a community? And the data that I looked at then said, if you can help shift the narrative for 10% of the whole community will shift. And so I was like, great. So I don't have to help a million physicians, I just need to help 100,000. And so when you hear me say I help 100,000, you know, that's what our mission is, to help 100,000 physicians. That's where that came
from.
So
that's very intentional. Yeah. Okay.
Very, very intentional. And I'm like, if I do that, I've done my job. So that's where that started from. The very first, and I say this because it's like everything else. I didn't have this figured out. I had never done something like this before. Our very first meeting, all the marketing powers I had in the universe got six doctors into the meeting. Okay, so we met at a restaurant. I'm like, this is Entree MD. This is what we do. Started coaching a few people one-on-one.
Yeah.
And at some point, I was like, you get to choose. Are you going to, is this going to be a hobby, a thing you just do? Or are you going to really do it? And so we experimented with our first event. You know, my marketing powers had grown. So we attracted 47 doctors for the very first Entree MD Live. They came from 9 states. It was like really impressive.
That's
to
exciting.
Me.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of what put Entree MD on the map in a way, like it became a real thing. And so at that event, I launched this 12-week program. I was like, we've done all this stuff in a day, but look what we can do in 12 weeks. We call it the Freedom Formula Masterclass. And people got such wild results. You were in the Entree MD Business School. So this was like the first seed of the Entree MD Business School. Like people like my business grew by my revenue grew by 115%. And it was so wild. Now I had at this point been on this personal development journey. And I know the journey doesn't end.
Right.
I didn't realize that that was my thoughts. Right. So at the end of 12 weeks, I'm thinking they would know this doesn't stop. And at the end of 12 weeks, they're like, bye. I'm like, where are you going?
What? Yes.
Like what just happened? I mean, yes, we have all these amazing wins, but there are more wins to be
There's
had.
So
there are more
much
skills
to
acquire.
Yes.
There's so much.
Yeah.
And so that's when I took a vow. I would never, ever, for as long as I live, do a 12-week
Right.
program. I'm like, no, that is unfair asking them to make that decision. And so I tweeted again. And the reason I'm telling people this is because you don't have to have it all figured out in the beginning. That's the whole point. So after the 12 weeks, I did another program that I called the Six Figure Club because people had this thing of you can't replace your physician income or whatever.
Sure.
So we called it the Six Figure Club and it was for 9 months. And again, that was amazing, but I made a fatal mistake. Well, fatal, like fatal for the program because I killed it after that. But because I know that as a community, being an entrepreneur is not mainstream. Thinking like an entrepreneur is not mainstream. And so I understood that there needed to be community because we need the immersive experience. So just hearing me talk and then going back to the same community, it'll have some impact, but it kills what I said every single time, right? You need to be in a community of people who are doing the same thing, speaking that same language, normalizing, delegating, normalizing, building a team, normalizing, building profitable businesses. Like you need that. So in that program, even though they were in a community, they were in a group, I let them all talk to me individually. So they're in a group. They didn't talk to each other. They didn't influence each other. They didn't do any of that. They were in a group, but they were all talking to me like one-on-one and stuff like that.
Interesting. Okay.
Very interesting.
Yes.
I was like, what have I done? I was like, no, this is not going to work.
It's because like coaching on steroids.
I was like, they need the immersion.
Yeah.
And so I stopped that program. And like after it was done and, you know, then this is 2020. So 2020, the middle of the pandemic, and I kept yelling from the rooftops, yes, there's a pandemic. We can still thrive. We just need to adapt and all of this stuff. And I had to make a decision. Do you really want to help doctors or do you just want to keep, you know, because what you're doing, the rate at which you're doing it, this is not going to cut it.
Yeah.
And so that was when I made the decision. I was like, okay, I was like, we're going to do the Entree MD Business School. Again, Dr. Sarah, I'm so glad you're asking these questions because we're going to normalize completely all the drama.
Absolutely. So that's the goal.
When we got to Entree MD Business School, I was like, okay, hang on. Who's fooling who? Like you're saying there's Harvard Business School, there's Emory Business School, and then Entree MD Business School. Like what in the world? You don't even have an MBA. You have run one business successfully. What in the world are you doing?
Right. That imposter syndrome starts creeping in. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. It was so bad. And to be honest, like the first time I started talking about the school and all that, underneath all of that, there was some shame. I just didn't let it stop me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I said, the deal is this. Doctors did not get a business education.
Nope.
And there's almost the guilt, like you want to make more money. Like when is enough enough? Like you want to have time off. How dare you when you could take care of all these patients?
Yes.
Like the narrative we run with is like anti business success. Like,
yeah.
And it doesn't mean anybody intentionally, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but the point is the way our operating system is not compatible with successful businesses. Like,
not
we need
all
of that rewired.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm like, I'm dedicating my career to help doctors do this. So
yep.
I may not have whatever fancy, shiny thing you need me to have, but they're going to get the results they need because I
yep.
know how to help people get results. That's my zone of genius.
Yep. Yep.
So we launched the business school. The first cohort, we had 22 doctors sign up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just started supporting doctors. Like,
yeah.
How do I make that transition from great clinician to great clinician and savvy entrepreneur?
Yeah.
How do I build a dominant brand? How do I master revenue generation? I mean, like, mm-hmm. I can master an algorithm. I can master revenue generation.
Mm-hmm.
I can have confidence.
Mm-hmm.
I can do that. How do I build a team that is a profitable team? Meaning every team, every role is pulling their weight and affecting the bottom line and all of that.
Yep.
So I'm not scared of my payroll growing because it's not an expense anymore. It's an investment.
Right.
And all of this, how do we normalize building seven-figure businesses, building multiple seven-figure businesses? And man, that was almost 4.5 years
Yeah.
ago. It has been such a ride to watch people retire their spouses, cross the seven-figure mark, cross the multiple seven-figure mark, to watch someone who says, I have not taken a vacation in 10 years, go on vacation for a whole month. And it's like,
yeah.
I just went and my practice went out. Like, you know,
yep.
like it didn't skip a beat. To watch people speak on all kinds of stages. I mean, that's one of my life's greatest honors that I get to do that, you know? So it's been so wild. And I'm grateful that whether people, you know, choose to come into the school or not, you know, there's a podcast that we launched, there's the books we've written. And so anywhere they're comfortable being served, we're here to serve them because I got to get the 100,000 so we can completely rewrite the narrative.
Yes.
And burnouts will be the thing of the past. Loss of autonomy will be a thing of the past. The financial
yes.
insecurity will be a thing of the past. And
yes.
And I can't wait.
Yeah, that is something that's been so different. I mean, there's a satisfaction I think you get from helping patients when, you know, when they're going through things, but to be able to help other doctors watch their practices and businesses grow, I have to say this is far and above anything I would have thought I would experience with my clients also. Like, I am so inspired and so high vibrating after I talk with clients about their wins and you know, how it's affecting their personal life and their business. I mean, it's just, coaching is just so different than I thought it would be. And I'm so thankful that there's groups and other docs that are doing this for other physicians, because we really weren't taught these things and we didn't even know it could be this. So thank you for that.
Thank you for what you do. You know, because really, all hands are needed on deck.
Absolutely.
It's a million people is a Herculean task.
That's a lot.
You know?
That's a lot of people to help. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. As many of us as we can help, like let's all do it. I wanted to ask you, we do have a lot of women that listen to this podcast, and a lot of them are trying to balance motherhood with business. And you have amazing children. I have met them. They have been at your events. You also homeschool your children with all of this going on, which just blows my mind. And I think it's going to blow anybody's mind. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Maybe a little how you decided to homeschool, how you're scheduling that, you know, and also if we can touch base, I think a lot of people kind of lose some of the focus with the fact that they think they're losing their time with their kids by doing their businesses. And in fact, I think there's a huge value in being an example for your kids. And I think your kids are a perfect situation to talk about that. So tell me how you're doing the homeschool mom thing.
Okay, so I'll start off with I was a victim of mom guilt. It was oh my goodness. So if you're there, I get it. But after this, I hope you just go like forget that. And so in the beginning of my practice, my first daughter was 2 years old. She had just turned two, and my son was 4 months old. So the day we signed the lease, these are the ages of my kids, the two of them. I would love to say. I had all of this planned out. I didn't. So in the beginning, I had all this guilt because not only did we start the practice, but I also took up a PRN job in the local urgent care, you know, because I had only been, you know, like I did my medical training in Nigeria. So I was born here. I was here till I was six. And then we moved back to Nigeria. I didn't come back to after medical school. So I had no credit history. I had none of that stuff.
Okay.
And so I didn't even qualify for a loan. So we self-funded. I worked in the urgent care to generate, to pay for my practice. That's the way that worked. And so I was probably pulling about 20 hours or so. And so some days, not every day, but some days, it was literally go see patients in the practice, go to the urgent care, work 4 p.m. to midnight, and then go home.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, that means I didn't really see them. You know what I mean? And so I had all of that guilt. But at that moment, I made a decision. I was like, it's going to take me a few years, but I'm going to do the work and I'm going to set myself up and buy my time back so I can do whatever I want to do with my kids, right? Like whatever I want to do. And I say that because sometimes you may need to put in hours like that. But, you know, for me, what made it easier to deal with is I made the decision that when I was with them, I will be with them. Right. So is the quality interaction there. And then I also had my, you know, my husband to lean on. I had my brother who lived with me at the time as well. So they were being cared for. They were loved on and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't all by me. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's kind of, you know, how that started. So they were home and then we put my daughter in pre-K and my daughter came back one day from pre-K singing Single Ladies by Beyonce. And I was like, okay, this child is 3 years old. Please somebody make it make sense because this is not playing in my house. What happened?
Yeah.
So we go to the school and they're like, yeah, they play that for the kids and all of that stuff. I was like, okay, yeah, no, I'm not doing all this work and develop and all that for no, right. We're not doing that.
Right.
So we pull them out and I then put my daughter in. There's a lady from our church who she was a teacher and she homeschooled one of her kids. And we had her watch my kids. Okay?
Okay.
Not homeschool, not to like, she, you know, she like, she's the babysitter. Okay. And then, so she has my 2-year-old practicing his writing. She has all this stuff happening and they had late birthdays. So by the time it was time to put them in kindergarten, you know, it was time for them to go to school. They said, no, you know, like your son, he's going to have to wait till he's six. I'm like, but he's writing, he's doing simple math.
Yeah.
He's like, what am I going to do? I'm sure they were thinking all these doctors, their kids are geniuses or whatever, but they're like, no, we can't do it. So I didn't have a choice but to homeschool. Like really, that's the first phase of homeschooling. That's how that started. So I'm like, they're home. What am I going to do? Now, I'd like to tell you that, you know, I got this part of the house and we built it out as our homeschooling area. And this was our schedule. That's not the way that played
out.
Remember,
okay.
I'm like, we're building a practice. Okay.
Right.
And we're building a practice. And we started a church at the same time we started the practice. So
oh,
I have three
goodness.
Series of babies going on at the same time.
Oh, my goodness.
So weekends, I'm working weekends.
So okay? much.
Yeah. So what did we do? This is what we did. I would work, you know, like 9:30 to 5:30. I'll be home at 6. And I tell my kids, I was like, so this is the deal. We can do schoolwork from 6 to 8 and you can play all day tomorrow. And they're like, yeah. So we work for 2 hours, 6 to 8. So
Perfect.
When I'm done with the practice shift, I come do the home shift for the homeschooling,
yep.
Get that done. All right, go play, go do whatever you have to do. And in the beginning, that's the way we did it because that's the only way I could make it work.
Yeah.
Right. And I didn't know what I know now. And I'll tell you what I know now.
Sure.
Okay. So, so that's the way we did that. And I did that for, I want to say maybe 3 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I was minding my business at Barnes and Nobles. I hear this lady trying to pay for a book. And she's like, oh yeah, you know, my students and I teach students who are homeschooled. We have a hybrid program and stuff. And I was still somewhat introverted.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, go talk to her. Like, how do you just talk to a stranger? This is me.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
Go talk to her. So I walk up to her. I said, I overheard you say, like, what is that? And so it turns out she has this program where, you know, homeschoolers, they would do 2 days in school with her. And then they do the other two days at home. But this person will then make sure they have the right curriculum, will do their grading, create transcripts, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
I was like, well, this is fantastic.
Right?
Turns out she lives 40 minutes away from me.
Beautiful.
I'm like, I wish I said beautiful. I was like, that's a hike.
It is a hike. Yeah.
It took me another year. See, so people learn from me. Okay. It took me 2 years to get the EHR, 1 year to get this person. Like, don't do that. Okay. So it took me a year. And eventually I was like, no, we have to do this with this lady. So they start going to, they start doing that. Initially my two kids were on the same 2 days, but then when they switched grades, then they were on different days. I was like, oh, and I'm not driving there 4 days a week. So
yeah.
I talked to the woman, this is a lesson. Everything's negotiable. I said, so how about I pay you double and you keep them all 4 days? And she said, yes.
Boom. I love it.
So I'm like, go to school, like don't bother me. But you know, she let them be in their grade, you know, like their grades based on their what they were able to do academically and all of that. So that was fantastic. And so as the older, you know, the younger two, when they were old enough, we put them there as well. And a year before the pandemic, I said, okay, everybody has passed the second grade where they will let them continue with whatever grade they were in. Mm-hmm. And so let's put them in private school. So we found a Christian private school, we put them there. But then one day they had been there for 2 years or so. One day I sat and I thought about it, because you and I, Dr. Sarah, you think about the level of personal development you've done post formal education, right?
Yes.
And so I asked myself a question. I said, if they continue the way they're going, they're making their A's, they're doing well in school, then they go to college and they get all these A's, would I have set them up to succeed in life?
Yeah.
And I could not say yes, because I know they're not going to learn about personal finance. Mm-hmm. I know they're not going to learn about leadership. They're not going to learn about business. They're not going to learn about character. They're not going to learn any of that stuff.
Nope.
And so I told, and they're already a year ahead of their peers. So I told my husband, I said, you know, I want to do an experiment. I want to bring them home. I want to create my own curriculum where academics is just one piece. And then there's faith. There's business, there's leadership, there's home management. Home management, because I want my house clean.
Okay? Yeah, so absolutely. Love that.
So there are those five areas. And I was like, what if we developed them in all five? What if they didn't have to wait to be in their 30s to learn like I learned?
Right.
You know, and for everyone listening, that doesn't mean you have to homeschool your kids. I mean, you can add it on, you can do whatever you want. But homeschooling was kind of, you know, the option that I chose. So I pulled them out and we started this whole thing. Best decision ever. Best decision ever, because you know my husband would do like a life application Bible study with them every morning. They read business books. Even the 9-year old, I get John Gordon's books because they're all story format.
Yes,
like, you know, and just like Ken Blanchard, Whom Am I Cheese, those kind of things.
Yes.
And so they're learning powerful lessons they don't even know, because it seems like stories. So they're reading those. I set them up with opportunities to lead. And I'm like, this is your textbooks for leadership. The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John Maxwell.
Maxwell.
Like, I'm struggling with this. Here's a chapter. You go read that.
Yes.
And then the home and all of that. So started doing that. It's been so good to watch them develop, not just academically, but on all sides. Sometimes people will say, you know, about the social part. And we were very intentional about that. So, you know, first of all, they're pastor's kids. So they know like a gazillion people, you know,
right. Like, they're in with everybody. Just,
they have a whole crew of people. And then, you know, when I do business trips and all that, a lot of times I will take them with me.
Yeah.
And so they get to meet all kinds of people, all kinds of ages. They're comfortable with adults, grandparents, like whatever bracket, because they're around all of that. Mm-hmm. So it's been really powerful. So I did that for 2 years, and then just this school year, I pulled the younger two out as well. Yeah. So it's all four of them.
Yeah.
So this is the thing that I did, because you have to think about it: multiple businesses, homeschooling four kids, this different education system and all of that. So what I did is I mapped out what exactly I wanted my vision to be, what I wanted them to learn, what I wanted their structure to be, and all of that. And I hired an administrator for my homeschool.
So, I love that. Yes.
Yes.
Hire the who. Not
how all the way.
Hire the who.
1,000%. And she's totally killing it. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's I wouldn't trade it for anything. So for someone who's dealing with mom guilt, I will say this. This is one of the things that really helped me. I remember sitting, you know, in my room, I heard my kids laughing and all. I was like, I'm not doing a good enough job, you know, taking care of them, developing them, whatever, creating opportunities for them and all of that. I'm not the person, and I'm not the stay at home mom material type of person at all.
Yeah, me neither.
I had a friend who, when she was off, she would give the nanny the day off. I was like, no, that's the day I need the nanny to work. Right. That's I'm that kind of person. And so so here I'm feeling guilty. And remember, my kids were going to this school with all these homeschooling moms, and they're like, oh, this homemade granola bar. I'm like, whatever, because I'm never making that, whatever that is. You know, like, so it was just.
Oh, God. People are going to be so glad to hear this. Yeah.
Shots fired the entire time. And I remember thinking that day, and this is a thought that came to me. Being a great mother is not about doing what everybody is doing. It's not about training your kids the way other people are training them. It's about leveraging all of you and installing that in them. So I may not make the homemade granola bar, but I know how to build businesses. So that mom's going to teach her kid how to do that. I'm going to teach my kid how to do what I got.
Yep.
Right. And so the question is, all the lessons you've learned, all the experiences you have, all the expertise you have, can you give that as a gift to your children?
Yeah.
And then they can then take that and do whatever is authentically them with that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I don't worry about that stuff. In fact, sometimes I would send them to my sister's house for a week. I'm like, okay, this week it'd be nice for them to learn how to make lasagna and this and that, because I'm not going to teach them. And I'm not trying to learn so I can teach them, but I can teach them what I know.
Yeah.
I can teach them to be confident on stage. I can teach them to have a strong faith. I can teach them to be composed in the face of chaos. I can teach them to be leaders. I can teach them to set big goals and accomplish them. Mm-hmm. I can teach them to fall in love with personal development. That's my stuff.
Yes.
So whatever is your stuff, give your kids your stuff. Nobody's going to ask anything else of you. And then whatever it is you don't have, you have people who have that. Send them there to go learn that stuff.
Yes.
Send them off. Send them off.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think people are going to resonate with that hugely. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So at the end of everything, I like to ask everyone, I mean, I know, you know, we've talked about a few books, and Eat That Frog was huge for you. Are there a couple other books that you would really recommend people look into, whether listen to or read?
Yeah, there are a few. So 10X is easier than 2X by Benjamin Hardy and Dan Sullivan is a really good book, just to kind of, especially for us as physicians, because we have this whole stuck narrative going on. Like we're here and it's not fair and this is where we are. This just takes you all the way out of that. Like you could be somebody else. You could create a whole different future for yourself. It's really amazing read. The second one would be Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell.
Yes, I know.
So good.
Oh,
it's
my
such
gosh.
A good book.
Yes.
Especially because a lot of us are perfectionists and nobody can do it but me. And we can't. Yeah, it will cure you of all of that.
Yeah.
And then your people are private practice people. So we have a book, The Profitable Private Practice Playbook.
Yes, yes.
It is, I mean, there is no fluff. It's literally, these are 7 ways you're leaving money on the table every day. If you would just read a chapter, do what it says. Read the next chapter, do what it says.
Yep.
I promise you, you will have a brand new practice by the time you're done, and a more profitable one, right?
Yes.
Because I don't know about you, but I've met people, they're running businesses that are doing $3.5 million in revenue, and they're not paying themselves.
No, it's a hot mess.
Because there's revenue, but there's no profit.
Yeah. Yes.
And so this is the cure for that. So those are three good. And of course, Eat That Frog. I read that every year.
Some that you just go back through.
Yes.
Buy Back Your Time is like that for me. I go through it like every year and I start evaluating everything from that higher perspective. Like, okay, here's how I'm going to delegate this. And it's like my life gets simpler every year.
Yes.
I love it. So
yeah.
And the Profitable Private Practice Playbook is such a good one. I have read that. That is awesome. And it's very like just condensed to the point. Like this is not something that you guys need to put in like hours and hours and hours to read. Like you will get through it and then you'll be making impacts and taking that action and it's going to be amazing. So thank you so, so much for being here. This was fantastic.
Thank you for having me. It's like a reunion we're having shop. So fun.
I know. I love that. All right. And where can people find you if they want to reach out?
Yeah. So you're on a podcast platform. And so just hit the search bar, type in EntreMD. That's ENTREMD. And you'll find the EntreMD podcast where we talk shop. We have like 440 episodes of shop.
Yeah, you've been doing this a while. It's a lot of shop talk. I love it.
All the things. And if you're ever curious, like what it is like to work with us and stuff like that, you can schedule a call at entremd.com/call. My team will be happy to talk with you. Dr. Sarah will tell you, we don't do any high pressure sales tactics or any of those things. We really just want to find out what your goals are. And we'll let you know what we do. And if we're a great match, we'll let you know what we have. But we just love supporting doctors.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Lovely. All right. It was wonderful to talk to you so much. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. And of course, thank you so much for what you do. Thank you.
Yes. We'll talk to you soon.